Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart. For our year-long series, Keep It 100, celebrating 100 years since the passing of the 19th Amendment, we've been looking at suffragists, excuse me, early female voters, and even modern progressives. But today, we're looking at someone very in line with our current climate, the first female health officer of a major U.S. city who, by the way, helped cure an epidemic. It's Keep It 100.
Hey, you gotta keep it 100.
The book Oregon's Doctor to the World, Esther Pohl Lovejoy and A Life in Activism, tells a story of how a working class woman went from fighting discrimination in medical school to becoming the first female health officer in Portland and any major American city. Dr. Lovejoy took office during the 1907 West Coast bubonic plague outbreak, which caused public health concerns, social distancing, and xenophobia against Chinese communities. Sound familiar? Not only did Dr. Lovejoy curb the epidemic, not a single death was reported in Portland, but she simultaneously used her platform to promote women's suffrage. Oregon women got the right to vote in 1912, 8 years before the 19th Amendment was ratified. As author Kimberly Jensen writes, it's time to rethink what we know about the broad movement for women's rights and underscore how important the state and the region were to that movement. Kimberly Jensen is a professor of history and gender studies at Western Oregon University. She is the author of several books, including Oregon's Doctor to the World, and she is joining us today. Kimberly, welcome to All of It.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Allison.
We're so excited to learn more about Esther. I'll start with Esther Clayson, who was, you know, not born to wealth, and she was a first generation of American. How did she make it to medical school in the late 19th century?
She made it to medical school because she wanted to have steady employment, and she'd been inspired by a woman who cared for her mother during her childbirth experiences. And so it was different then. You had to have the equivalent of a high school degree, and in Portland, there were two competing medical schools, so she always joked that they wanted her money.
Did she know what she wanted, what kind of doctor she wanted to be?
I think she was very pragmatic. She recognized that the major residencies and specialties were going to her male colleagues, and that delivering children was a way into what we would today call general practice or family practice. The medical education in Portland at the time was pretty progressive. They had clinics in town, and she worked with a lot of folks who were unable to pay but needed her care. And so I think she early on learned the lessons of the importance of public health and the way that people's lives could be empowered by healthy environments and health care.
It's interesting. I'm curious what roles in medicine women did typically have at this time in this part of the country.
Well, there were many women doctors. In fact, it peaked around their numbers peaked around World War I at about 6,000, and then they went on decline. So it's an interesting situation. There was a sense that women were caretakers, and nursing became professionalized after the Civil War. And so, as other women were, you know, knocking on the doors of universities and professions, the medical profession was very prominent. There were also a lot of different traditions in medicine. So homeopathy, for example, and alternative medicines. And those medical schools were, you know, welcoming to women because they needed students as well. There were all-female medical schools as well as co-educational ones. So it was it wasn't easy, but the doors were opening.
My guest is Kimberly Jensen, professor and author of Oregon's Doctor to the World, Esther Pohl Lovejoy, and A Life of Activism. In terms of her personal life, forgive me if I don't, because I don't know this, in certain professions, women could be married, in certain ones they couldn't. What about if you were a doctor?
You have a great intuitive question there, even if you didn't know the answer, because medicine was a profession that saw many partnerships, many heterosexual partnerships. Married couples would be, you know, have a partnership together and have a office sometimes in their own home. That's what Esther Clayson, who married Emil Pohl, did. They were they had an office out of their home. They were classmates at the Oregon medical department. So it was possible to do that. And of course, there were many same-sex partnerships at the time that would also, you know, have an easier time for folks to practice together. So that was something that was fairly common. And so there were more married women doctors.
Right before
Dr. She and her husband also had a commuter marriage because he was interested in Alaska mining and had some financial interest there. And so they worked that out as well. Her mom lived with her and helped to raise their son. So they had a lot of strategies that might seem familiar to us today.
Sounds so modern in many ways. I'm interested in what Dr. Pohl was doing right before she became Portland City Health Officer.
She was in practice. She was famous for riding a bicycle to deliver babies and soon graduated to a car when she got a little more well off. But she was in private practice and also had been on the city health board. So when Mayor Harry Lane, who was also a doctor, was elected in 1907, she had been in that service and was ready to take on the role of city health officer.
She was elected city officer. Why health officer? Why was she thought to be the right person for this job?
I think there were several reasons for it. She had been prominent in the 1906 Votes for Women campaign in Portland and in Oregon. She was connected to the American Medical Association, the National American Woman Suffrage Association. So she had some of those political credentials and organizing credentials. And in the suffrage campaign, particularly of 1906, Oregon was one of the first states in the early 20th century to really develop outreach through the mass media of the time, which were the newspapers. And so her campaign experience, bringing things like, you know, working in parades, flyers, lots of speeches, gave her access to a lot of the city and got her name around, really. But it also gave her practice in organizing coalitions with various women's groups. So I think that 1906 experience of suffrage and, of course, her service on the City Health Board combined to bring that. Harry Lane also was progressive, and he was a supporter of women. He appointed a number of women to various roles within city government. So he has a role as well.
My guest is Kimberly Jensen. She's a professor and author of the book Oregon's Doctor to the World, Esther Pohl Lovejoy, and A Life in Activism. Let's talk about her response to the bubonic plague. This is so interesting considering the times we're in. When did it become clear to Dr. Pohl that she was facing an outbreak and that she was going to have to do something?
The communication in the Pacific Rim medical world was fairly good, and there were, especially because the Public Health Service and, you know, the really had to also look out for shipping, and so there was a lot of early warnings, we'll say, and there had been a powerful outbreak in 1900, so they were always on the alert for the plague, and it was also, I think, important to note that science really came into its own in this outbreak on the Pacific Rim in 1907, because it was really here that the rat flea human connection was made. And so there were concrete steps that could be taken, and science did have concrete answers. So I think she had a lot of experience in obviously thinking about this, but there was also a network of city health officers, state health officers, they were all looking at this and wondering, you know, how they could best organize. So that organization was in place. And
Go ahead.
No, please do that. I think that's one of the reasons that she was anticipating it. There was a strong network.
What was her strategy for facing the outbreak?
Her strategy was to draw on those coalitions that she had helped to build among women's groups and other organizations, and also using her connections in statewide health departments and city health departments to get the word out. And she drew again on the strategies of the suffrage movement to use the newspapers. She had she took journalists and photographers on a tour of the waterfront to say, we have to clean this up. We have to, you know, have money to do this. And it was a very successful strategy because she knew that the city council had many business owners that they were concerned about the business of the city being affected. And so this strategy of, you know, getting women's groups and other health groups together, of using the media, of social media of the time, using the newspapers, really worked well for her. She was well-spoken. She knew how to give a good speech, both in front of the city council and also in front of public groups. And so she wanted the public to be educated so that they would call on the city council to take action, but also so that they would be informed so that they could be safe themselves. And that, it just strikes me as we are experiencing this today, that's a strategy that worked for her then and certainly is working today for many. New York has Commissioner Barbeau, Dr. Barbeau, so there's some similar things.
I think it's interesting also, a sad similarity is the xenophobia that was happening at the time that is happening now. What were the accusations and how did Dr. Pohl handle them?
There were accusations that the plague came from China and that the plague was centered in Portland's Chinatown. And there were lessons that people didn't remember well from 1900. In Honolulu, Chinatown had been burned because of fears around that. And so the population of Oregon, there were about 7,000 Chinese American residents, and there were many Chinatowns, but Portland's was large. And so there was a tendency among policymakers and, unfortunately, doctors, public health officials, and the public to try to scapegoat Chinese Americans. We know that there were many fears that sometimes when people are in crisis and fearful, they scapegoat others or they want simple answers. And so her goal was to try to combat that. She knew that that had been a disaster in 1900, but moreover, she knew that if people thought that if Chinatown were quarantined or that if the only efforts needed were there, that there would be problems because, of course, everyone needed to be aware and needed to take action. So she refused to scapegoat Chinese Americans in Portland and essentially asked that they be treated as everyone would be treated. And she, in the press, refuted the call to focus on Chinese American residents, saying that she felt that their community was an example and that she wanted to, you know, learn from them about the strategies that they had for keeping disease free and so forth. So she went against many of her colleagues and took a stand on that. And I think that that's a very important lesson. It's also, I think, one of the reasons that she was successful and there were no deaths in Portland.
My guest is Kimberly Jensen, professor and author of the book Oregon's Doctor to the World, Esther Pohl, Lovejoy, and a Life in Activism. We've only got about a minute left, but she was a very progressive person. She had an eye for public works, public reform. When you think about her contribution to the suffragist movement, what do you think it is?
I think it is that she believed in a concept of civic health, that everyone mm-hmm. needed to be empowered politically, economically, with the tools to help keep their communities safe. After World War I, she took this to a global level with medical humanitarian relief and support for women's rights. And so her goal was that empowerment of residents, the empowerment especially of women, would help to make safe and healthy communities.
It's a fascinating story. The name of the book is Oregon's Doctor to the World, Esther Pohl Lovejoy and a Life in Activism. It is by Professor Kimberly Jensen. Professor, thank you so much for being with us and teaching us so much about Dr. Lovejoy.
Allison, thank you so much. You're very welcome.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Geoffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.